2024 is the year of elections, and the biggest one is now underway. In India, polling lasts 44 days, with nearly a billion people eligible to vote, almost three times the population of the United States. This unique electoral process began on Friday. But it's not just about the numbers for the world's most populous country. This is a test of Prime Minister Narendra Modi's push for India to be a leading figure on the world stage and make it the voice of the developing world. Supporters credit Modi with making it one of the world's fastest growing economies, with many people enjoying a new level of wealth. But critics say youth unemployment is growing and that Modi has fanned religious tensions and clamped down on dissent. On this special episode of Reuters World News, we look at Modi the man, his policies, and the religious and economic divides. I'm Kim Vanell in London.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi at a final campaign rally. The main opposition Congress party leaders Rahul Gandhi and Priyanka Gandhi also wrapped up their campaigns 2 days before voting began. We can speak now to Krishan Kaushik, who is Reuters political and general news correspondent in New Delhi. Hey, Krishan.
Hey, Kimberly. Nice to speak to you.
Really great to have you on the podcast. It's going to be a big month for you. The sheer scale of these elections is mind-boggling.
It's more than a month. It's a month and a half. And very eager to, you know, see what's going to happen.
Yeah. And this is your third time covering the national general elections in the country, right?
That's right. This is the third national general elections. I've covered dozens of state elections, but the national elections are a different beast altogether.
So let's get straight into it. Indian elections are unique, really, for their sheer scale and complexity. Can you talk us through how this mega event is going to unfold?
Yes, as you said, these are quite unique elections. There are seven phases of elections. That's seven dates over the next 6 weeks when people will come out and vote in their constituencies. And the results will be declared on June the 4th. So the first vote that was cast on April 19th will also be counted on June the 4th. So it's a pretty, pretty long exercise. They ensure that they reach every last voter, no matter whether the voter is in the hilly terrains of the Himalayas, whether they are in the deserts of Rajasthan in Western India, whether they're in the jungles of Central India. They have to reach each one of those. The Election Commission will set up about 1 million polling stations around the country so that all these people can come out and vote. So this size of the country, the size of the electorate, that makes it quite a complicated exercise.
Okay. So we have to wait a while until the actual results, right? When should we expect the actual results?
The counting will start in early morning on June the 4th. So on June the 4th, we get to know which is the largest party. Most people are expecting that it will again be Bharatiya Janata Party. And if that is the case, then Prime Minister Narendra Modi will return to power.
So I know his party is known as, by the acronym, BJP. What exactly are the polls saying right now in terms of how he and his party are likely to do?
At the moment, in the last few months, the opinion polls that have been conducted suggest that BJP alone can win upwards of 300 seats out of the 543-member parliament. And the allied parties with BJP, if you put them all together, they can go as high as up to 390 seats. That gives them a very, very strong majority. It gives them more than two-thirds of the seats in the parliament. That's a pretty brute majority that they have, which can allow them to make many profound changes if they want in the constitution, which a government with a simple majority cannot.
Why is Narendra Modi so popular?
There are multiple reasons for that. One of the main reasons is that the opposition is extremely weak. It's disintegrated. They don't have a common face as leadership. That gives BJP and Narendra Modi a definitive edge. But that is not to take away from what Narendra Modi himself and the party is doing. First, they have a brand. That's Narendra Modi himself. They have a face. Narendra Modi in the last 10 years, and even before that, when he was the chief minister of the Western state of Gujarat in India, since then, he has tried to build this image of himself as a strong man and a person who leads from the front, and everything that's happening right in the country is happening because of him and his leadership and his governance. Second thing that they have very strong messaging. There's a two-pronged strategy over here. First is the core Hindutva base, that is the people who support in the Hindu first ideology of BJP. And second, the government of BJP has claimed that they are more efficient in their welfare schemes, which has helped people in the lowest strata of Indian society, the poorest of the poor. Third, there's an entity called RSS, Rashtriya Swayamsevak Sangh. It's the ideological fountainhead of this party. It's the RSS ideology, that's the Hindutva ideology or the Hindu first ideology. Fourth, what they have built really strongly in the last 10 years are the resources. Today, BJP is the richest party in the country. So it has all these 4 points going for them, which the opposition lacks because one, they're not unified. Second, they don't have the resources. Third, they just don't have this perfect messaging that the BJP has.
Can you talk to me a little bit about how the BJP uses the media, online content, even artificial intelligence? Because as you mentioned, they're a very well-oiled machine. What does that actually look like?
Almost every Indian has a mobile phone that's connected to the internet today. And BJP has used the social media to its maximum benefit. It's not unusual for almost every person in the morning to find on their family WhatsApp groups certain messages that are not directly supporting BJP, but are in some way very appreciative of the work that Narendra Modi has done in the last 10 years and the great heights he can take the country to if he comes back to power. You have people who are pushing this messaging on these WhatsApp channels, which then eventually do reach almost all mobile phones in the country. That's one. They have been much sharper in the use of Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram compared to the opposition as well. Earlier this year, the BJP-led government or the Prime Minister Modi's government hired certain social media influencers to propagate their ideas. Now, how these ideas were being propagated, these social media influencers were interviewing the sitting ministers. These sitting ministers were talking about the government's achievements. These achievements are then all attributed to the Prime Minister. So this constant reinforcement of Prime Minister Modi as the ultimate leader who's deciding everything, who's taking all the decisions, this messaging gets widely spread and it percolates down through mobile phones to almost every individual who has a mobile phone in the country.
One of the strengths for India right now is the economy. Narendra Modi has promised to create jobs, boost infrastructure, and as Krishan says, expand welfare programs, and make India the world's third largest economy by 2029. Sanjay Kumar, a political analyst at the Centre for the Study of Developing Societies, told us Modi has stoked a sense of pride and nationalism.
Being an Indian, we feel proud of being an Indian. India's image in the world has gone up. We have a strong leader who has raised the stature of India across the world.
Krishan, this pride is also about wealth and success. The strength of India's economy is key for Modi.
In the last few decades, Indian economy has been one of the outliers among the larger economies in the world, growing between 6 to 8%, sometimes even crossing the 8% mark. Today, India is the fifth largest economy in the world. However, there's a caveat. While there is a 7.6% of GDP growth that was last year, and next year it's estimated to be 6.8%, but there is a highly unequal growth. There's a K-shaped recovery since the COVID pandemic.
You mean the recovery has not been equally spread across all groups?
Absolutely. It's an unequal society. It's a very polarized society in terms of economic divide.
But as well as that economic divide you talk about, there have also been divisions in terms of religion. Modi has built on this idea of pride we mentioned and the Hindu first messaging.
There's certainly a feeling of a Hindu reawakening under Modi. However, this idea of India being a Hindu-first nation predates Modi by many, many years. As I mentioned, the Rashtriya Swayamsevak Sangh, or the RSS, which is the fountainhead of the BJP, it was born in 1925. And making India to be a Hindu-first nation has been one of its founding principles. So you have sympathizers or members of this organization who are part of the society, and they've been working quite patiently since 1925 about this idea of how to make India a Hindu first nation. Now, what has happened under Modi is this idea of what India is today, it's become intertwined with the idea of what RSS wanted India to be. So for many of the supporters, it means that India's rise can only happen when the Hindus reawaken to their civilizational or to their ancestral glory. These are not two things that can happen mutually exhaustively. They can only happen together for them.
What is life like for India's minorities?
Well, you know, you're asking this question, unfortunately, to a non-minority. I belong to the majority in this country, but I can try and summarize it from how I understand it. Well, there's a lot of fear for sure, because your loyalty can be questioned if you criticize the government. Your loyalty to the country can be questioned if you criticize the prime minister. Your eating habits can be questioned if you are a minority community. Many Hindus, I will not say all, but many Hindus, they don't eat beef. In certain states, during the month of Ramzan, there's of course feasting after the fast, right? In the last few days of Ramzan this time around in India, there was a slight overlap with what Hindu considers are nine sacred days. They're called the Navratris or the nine nights. In certain states or in certain parts of the largest state of Uttar Pradesh, selling of meat was banned. So while Muslim families would love to break the fast with a feast that includes meat, they couldn't access meat because even the butcher shops were closed. And that's because the Navratris had started. So this is how the Hindu first identity or the identity of India as a Hindu first country plays out. And this does instill fear in the minorities about their rights, about will they ever be considered as equal as to the Hindu compatriots as Indians. So there is fear about what rights they can have if BJP comes back to power with a much, much stronger majority in the parliament.
Islamophobia has increased sharply under Modi's leadership. How does he deal with or respond to that? I mean, it's widely reported internationally. How does he address that?
Well, there are two ways to address it as he does it. One, he dismisses it. He dismisses the Western criticism in two ways. First, by saying that it is motivated. Second, by saying that they don't understand the Indian society. The second defense that the government has and that Prime Minister Modi has against Islamophobia, they say when they work for the poorest of the poor, they don't differentiate between whether the benefits of their welfare schemes are going to a Muslim person or a Hindu person or a Christian person. So they say they are actually secular in the governance because they're trying to help everybody who requires help.
As Christian highlights, India's response to Western criticisms have been robust. That's exemplified by India's response to a rift with Canada.
Think about it from our perspective. We have serious reasons to believe that agents of the government of India could have been involved in the killing of a Canadian citizen on Canadian soil. And India's response is to kick out a whole bunch of Canadian diplomats by violating their rights under the Vienna Convention.
Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau in November, at the height of a diplomatic row with India that continues today. Christian, does India's response to this dispute underline the country's newfound confidence?
Modi has been quite conscious to project a muscular foreign policy. So after Canada made those accusations last year, India reacted sharply. The US, there was an indictment of an Indian man when the US said that Indian agents were involved in an attempted assassination plot of another Sikh leader. So these things had been unheard of in the past. Of course, the Indian government has denied all these allegations when it comes to Canada, and has promised an investigation when it comes to the US allegations. But now what has changed is the rhetoric is sharper. So all this projects a much more masculine foreign policy. If Modi comes back to power, it seems like this foreign policy will only become a lot tougher. And this plays out very well for their core base back home.
And how does that impact US relations and India's standing in the world?
What this government has claims is that under Prime Minister Narendra Modi, India's global profile has increased and now India is a global player when it comes to almost all important platforms. India is a member of the G20. India has been invited to most of the G7 meetings of late, and India aspires a permanent seat on the UN Security Council. India and US have been inching closer to each other for the last 2.5 decades. Even before he became the Prime Minister under the Congress rule earlier, India and US signed the nuclear deal. So that was back in 2008. But this proximity has increased over the last 7-8 years as US has pivoted towards Indo-Pacific, keeping its eye on China. It sees that India can be a bulwark against China in this region. US is now willing to share certain technologies that it has never shared with a non-treaty ally earlier. It is willing to share the know-how to manufacture fighter jet engines. That deal is still being discussed. India is buying more defense platforms from the US. India's trade with the US is going up. So the two countries have definitely been coming close together. Both the countries are part of the Quad grouping, which includes India, US, Japan, and Australia. And of course, last year, Prime Minister Modi was in Washington, and President Biden said this is one of the most important partnerships for this century. So it's a pretty tight partnership. India is still not as close to the US as a NATO ally would be, or as other Five Eyes countries are. But still, it is a pretty strong relationship at this moment.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be a huge couple of weeks for you reporting on these elections, and we will be waiting with bated breath to see the eventual outcome. But we'll leave it there for now. Thank you so much, Christian. It's been amazing speaking to you.
Thank you, Kimberly.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
That's it for this special edition of Reuters World News. India's election lasts until June 1st, with all the votes counted together on June 4th. We'll bring you the very latest on our weekday updates. And you can keep track of everything happening in India at Reuters.com. Our daily show returns on Monday, but before we go, we have a quick favour to ask. We'd love to know what you think of the podcast. You can help us improve Reuters World News by taking a short survey. You can find the link in the description. It takes 5 minutes, and it's all about ensuring we're giving you more of what you want. And a reminder that to make sure you never miss an episode, subscribe on your favourite podcast player or download the Reuters app.